Yes, today I am once again joined by the one and only ESPN journalist, Skip Jackson. Skip, what's going on, bro?
Nothing, bro. What's going on, man? Trying to maintain, you know, follow sports and follow politics and follow life all at once.
Yeah, there's a lot going on these last few weeks.
Yeah, man. It's been a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, the current temperature in America seems like it lowered a lot. It's like it was a collective sigh of relief when Biden got officially announced as the president-elect. It was like the whole world was like, breathe, like can we get a
yeah, stage? But here's the thing. I mean, but the way it was split, it wasn't a full sigh of relief, and it was only a sigh of relief for almost like literally a small percentage of over half the country. You know,
Very true. So
that's what kind of, you know, everything seems to be so pocketed now. That if you were in that space, then yeah, you felt that sigh of relief. But if you weren't in the space, you didn't feel that sigh of relief. And even with that sigh of relief, there was still that lingering fact that we still got to deal with this. Because if you are on the side of wanting, you know, not to choose parties, but if you're on the side of, you know, trying to get Democratic control or something to be a full change for what we've been through the last 4 years.
Right.
You didn't get it because of what's going on in the House and the Senate. And you didn't get a full relief because things were still unfolding. You know, and things are still unfolding. So it's a weird, weird, long sigh of relief, but it's not a full sigh of relief on either side. You know what I'm saying? It's a necessary place that I think America needs to be in to really go through what America needs to go through if we expect change in this country.
Yeah, I totally agree with what he said. I'm in that pocket, so I had a sigh of relief when I saw it, a partial sigh of relief. The Biden administration has to go ahead and do what they say they want to do, ask and speak. But the country is really split. It's like more people voted for Trump more than they did 4 years ago. It's like
crazy.
You know,
right, and that's the thing about it. Once again, it depends on what side you're on. It's like, is that really crazy? Because it's almost like we're trying to lay our own personal groundwork on what we think common sense is. And you would think that common sense 4 years ago, where you kind of went in blind, unknowing how Trump was going to govern, that you may have cast your vote against Hillary. Or you may have cast your vote against, Hillary as a politician, or you may have cast your vote against woman being president, or you may have cast your vote against the Democratic Party. You may have cast your vote, you know, against anybody connected to Obama and his administration. You know, all that stuff you could have cast a vote against during the first run. But unknowing how Trump was going to govern, but all because he's never done this before. So it's just a blind vote. But it would seem to me that after seeing 4 years of this, you know, the double down was amazing because now you know exactly what you're going to get.
Right.
Dealing with him, and for like you said, for more people to still double down on that, to individuals like you and I who don't see eye to eye with the way he governed and the way he ran the office, it's like this makes common sense that you not do this. But once again, 70 million people feel the exact opposite.
Right.
So, you know, as much as I want to disagree with that, I have to take consideration that I'm not saying 70 million people can't be wrong. But I just can't say 70 million people are wrong in their evaluation of what I feel is common sense.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Their sense may be common to them. And at some point, we have to respect that. Because after looking at this 4 years, if this still makes sense to you, you know, at some point, your common sense is just different than mine.
Very true. Yeah, an African-American community came out huge of this turnout. Huge. I mean, I was done before, but I was really done when he got up there and said, stand back and stand by. I'm like, you don't hear this shit?
I mean, there's a collection of things. And one thing I appreciate about Trump and even in what he's doing right now, he has stayed consistent to who he has been at all times. And I'm not one of those people that, like, calls him a demigod or calls him the devil or this, that, and the other. Because, you know, in all honesty, man, there's only – even holding the office of president, there's only so much power one man can have in this democracy.
True.
My problem is what we just got to be talking about, that there's 70 million people that align themselves with his ideology and his behavior. That's the one problem. And the other problem I have is the media over the course of his entire presidency, even before, once he got elected, always expected him to be something he wasn't. They always expected him to pivot.
Right.
And to me, the one thing I appreciate about him is that he never did pivot. He's always been the same dude. They thought, that, okay, well, you know, when he was campaigning, he's just doing this, that, and the other. Once he gets in office, he'll, you know, he'll act president. That shit never happened. You know what I'm saying? And if you go to everything you just said, like he just said about the Proud Boys, you know, we can go through a line of everything. You know, people like to point out that there's good people on both sides things. You know, we can go through all type of flashes throughout his entire presidency that has been consistent to who he is. And to me, we can't be mad at him for being that. We have to be mad at ourselves, and especially the media, I point out, and expecting him to change.
Right.
He's not going to change. You know what I'm saying? This, the comment he made about the Proud Boys was at the, what, first or second debate. It was at the tail end of his presidency.
Yeah.
At the end. We've gotten 4 years of this, so why should we be surprised by this?
Right. And one thing about it, he is in that position where everyone has their own mind. Like, people do what they want to do. Like, his presence enabled, like, more racism to be more apparent, like, bring it out more. Because, like, if Biden takes over, it's going to be a lower percentage of that. It's going to be constant, but it's going to be not as blatant as it is. Because, like, he allowed it. He didn't like, put water on the flames. He encouraged this shit. Like, that's one thing that I never liked about his presidency. He never tried to lower the temperature in the country. Like, he just blamed it.
Right, but that's I think where we may differ. It depends, because I'm not gonna say I like this presidency, but I'd rather people be who they are as opposed to trying to be something else. I want to deal with you face up in truth.
Right.
So if you are a racist and you hate black people, be that. I'd rather deal with that up front. I'd rather deal with overt than covert. You know.
Gotcha.
So what Trump brought out is what I've been feeling my entire 56 years on this planet, as far as being an American concerned. It's just every now and then it had pockets of being hit. And I'd rather deal with the out front than the hidden. I'd rather you show me exactly who you are, and we can function that way.
Right.
There's no way. To me, I think it's easy to coexist when we are who we are, as opposed to trying to be something that we're not. Now, once again, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I'd rather have it that way. And I actually appreciate, you know, those individuals that Trump did embolden.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because now I know what I'm dealing with up front. I'm not playing any guessing games.
Right.
Look, I don't like you. You don't like me. You know, now we can try to respect one another. But I like the fact that I'm a threat to you. I like the fact that I know up front what you want to do to me. Because now I know where to place you. I know how to navigate with you. I don't have to play any guessing games. And I don't have to think twice about you being something that you're not. Because you're telling me that you're something that you're not. And outside of Trump's presidency, you had a lot of people presenting themselves as something that they're not.
Well,
and that's more scary to me than dealing with stuff up front.
I could totally agree with that. I'm an upfront person. I like being upfront. I mean, it shows, like you said, it shows where you are in that person's life, what you want to do. I love that.
Yeah, and it allows
us
to be upfront. You know what I'm saying? It allows us to be. It allows us to not mask who we actually are internally, to try to appease to a larger part of America,
right.
You know, to try to water down who we are, you know, to try to compromise. It's like, I can't be this person because America is not going to accept. No, it works both ways. So it allows us to be freer to who we are and what we're going to tolerate. And it allows us to navigate through waters that we know we're going to have to deal with, as opposed to playing guessing games. You know, I like that. You know, and if you're looking at a people that are in search of freedom, we all are as black folks in this country.
Right.
Part of freedom is rooted in truth.
True.
You know, so if we know who you are up front, and we know how you feel about us up front,
right,
instead of like guessing, well, all white folks don't hate us, and all, no. Now we got proof that 70 million of you all don't align yourselves with how we think and how we eat.
Crazy.
That's cool. No, but that's cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now I know. And that's part of the reason that we're in the you know, that the black you know, Black Lives Matter movement has strength.
Right.
It's because of that, because we're dealing in this truth. It's no longer black individuals or brown individuals or women. You know, every other minority that is a part of this movement
right.
feels free to now be themselves because now we know we're up here. Like, oh, y'all going to be up front and truthful with that? Y'all
right.
are going to be emboldened? Y'all feel emboldened now? Okay,
right.
here's our emboldened. You know what I'm saying?
Right, true.
And as cantankerous as it is, I think it works better because now we're able to be freer. Speak our own mind, speak our own truth, and fight for that truth.
Right.
And at least we know what we're fighting up against. We know
Very
what to
true.
Expect. Yes.
Very true. Yeah, time to tell. Some change is going to come, hopefully. We'll see. Definitely.
Yeah,
see.
I mean, if it, once again, and I hate to be the, you know, perpetual pessimist in this, but it may change, but how long is it going to stay that way? You know, we've been through this before. We have fought for our, you know, human rights, you know, on various levels before, and
right.
those things change, but as society moves forward, which
right.
all societies do, they never stay the same.
Right.
As society moves forward, we don't move forward in line with society. So, yes,
right.
we can, there has been change, but how does that change, you know, stay on par with and on pace with what society is moving forward with?
Right.
At some point, it seems that even if we do get changed, we still get left behind on some things.
True.
So as much as I think there's change, I think we need to be very careful
yeah.
about what type of change we're requesting and how long we want this change to be, whether this change is going to be sustainable in
right.
a society that doesn't put us first.
Right.
You know, so where, you know, I don't want this to, I would hate for this to be a situation where we see change, but it's just an appeasable change.
Right.
It's just a, you know, here, okay, you all are fighting and want this, that, and the other, okay. And America's like, here, we just keep you all happy. You know, we'll
right.
pacify you all with this. And that's your, you
yeah.
know, that's our definition of change, because we've seen this before.
Yeah, maybe
you know?
Street change, some street signs, pay on this, yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly,
that's,
exactly.
Yeah.
And now, you know, 30 years from now, we're back in the same conversation, the same
right.
way we are, you know, 40 years removed from 60s and having the same conversation over again. Yeah,
right.
things aren't the same as they were in the 60s, and we did get changed, but
yeah.
what has that change led us to?
Right.
Eventually and essentially, it led us back to the same conversation we were having 40 years ago, and
right.
that's the change I don't want.
Right. Hopefully the presence of Kamala Harris will make a difference. We'll see if that's a huge factor also.
Well, as we, man, look, you know.
We'll see.
Well,
we'll see.
I like what Kamala stands for.
Right.
I like her placement, but once again, there's only so much power one man and one woman can have, especially when they are an elected official.
Right.
You know, if we didn't learn anything from Obama's presidency, is that, you know, the way this country is set up for
yeah.
change, if you are
right.
inside the system, they can make it almost impossible for you to, you
yeah,
know,
sure.
Execute the change that,
yeah.
that you were looking for. So, you know, and this is no disrespect to Kamala. But, you know, I don't know that if in 8 years what Obama couldn't get through, I can't see her stomaching and, you know, breaking through the same fight that she will be up against.
Yeah.
Without having his power and coming out with more victories than he did. You
yeah.
know, they're going to make it harder for her to legislate.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point. Right.
Right, yeah, because Congress is going to be held for Biden administration. I mean, Trump not even trying to leave. I'm not going nowhere yet. Y'all going to
no.
kick me.
No, and once again, right, that goes to your 70 million. You know, that Trump can go anywhere he wants to, but he's taking 70 million people with him. And we can't
right.
act like in this country 70 million people do not constitute a voice.
Right.
You know,
so,
it's like I said about the media. It's funny how the media keeps referring to Trump having a base. 70 million is not a base, dude. That's a half a country. You know,
yeah,
what
yeah.
you're dealing with is so much more than a base, and they're minimizing it by calling it a base. That's not a base, man.
Yeah.
That's not even a voting block. That's a half
that's,
a country. 70 million? That's ridiculous. So if he can do whatever he wants to do, his people and he are not going anywhere. So as much as we can believe in, you know, or have the audacity to hope in what Kamala's able to do.
Yeah.
Dude, that 70 million gives them power and strength to not bow down or agree to anything she wants to do.
Very true.
Unless the other side always comes 75 million strong. And you know that's going to be tough.
Right. It's going to be an uphill battle.
Oh, well, always uphill has battle. Been. Always has
yeah.
been.
Yes, it has. NBA season is returning sooner than a lot of people wanted to, especially the Lakers and the Miami Heat. But a lot of us are glad the 1920 season is over, which turns out to be a template for the 2021 season because they're going to do something because COVID is spiking now at the wrong time for the NBA.
Yeah.
But they got to go. I mean, they already set the date. It's on the 22nd. This is going to be a huge task. Now they have all 30 teams that Adam Silver has to look over. And it's going to be COVID is everywhere. And they're not going to be in a bubble. This is going to be a huge task. I don't know if this season is going to go uninterrupted or not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I think, you know, one, it depends on what each team decides to do. You know, this is one of the few things I'm not on board with Adam Silver and the owners and the league itself
right.
about, like, pushing the season to begin so soon.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the last 5-6 years in the NBA, there's always been injuries that have played a role in the outcome of a team winning the championship. And, you know, with you only, you know, having 71 days or 72 days between the finals and the beginning of the season, you're risking, you know, having an incomplete season due to injury that has nothing to do with COVID. You know what I'm saying? It just has to do with people's bodies. You know, and trying to bring that back at this fast pace and not giving it proper time to rest. I think you're going to see a lot of teams, especially those that went deep into the bubble, deep into the playoffs during the bubble, pacing themselves. You know what I'm saying? At the beginning of the season because they're trying not to get injured. But, you know, I think doing this long term, you're really risking the injury situation to have a bigger role in who is dubbed champion than it has in the last couple of years. And like I said, if you look back last 5-6 years, I think there's only been one time maybe the injury didn't play a large role. And what wound up happening through the playoffs and who was crowned champion?
Yeah.
You know, look at Miami last year. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You miss Bam and you lose Logic. You know, year before, KD and Clay, you know.
Right.
Year before, I mean, the times of LeBron. LeBron started out in Cleveland without, you know, Kevin Love and Kyrie.
Yeah, right.
The Golden State Warriors lost Andrew Bogut. Then they, you know. Russell Westbrook has gone down. You know, Clippers have been injured consistently. We can go through – you know, Kawhi being injured in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
We can go through all of the things, you know, and look at what injuries play. And this is when they had a full offseason to get healthy.
Right.
And you're not coming off of a bubble situation, you know, where games were much more intense, you know, and, you know, it's all type of things. So, I don't know. I wish they would have given themselves more time off, but, you know, and I'm not an owner, so and I understand the power of money, but what I read and they broke down is like, man, either we start this thing on December 22nd, or you know, there's hundreds of millions of dollars the team is going to lose, and after losing the money that they lost last year,
right?
You know, I don't know. It can't all be about money, but at some point, that's what they're in business for. So you have to face reality and be like, you're going to lose that battle. So good luck.
Yeah, there's definitely some load management going on. One thing they're talking about doing is like having a team stay in a certain city longer and have like that series play out. So like if say the Lakers play like the Nets, I mean not the Nets, he's back. If they play like the Magic or some team like that, you might see LeBron or KD sit out to maybe one or two games of that series. They know they're not going to need that series. But then again, sitting two games, each game going to be more important. So that two games, you said LeBron out, they might need those to get the one seed. You never know how the season is going to go. They might need those two games to get, like, a certain seeding. So it's going to be a chess move all over the board. Like,
But here's the thing, though. I mean, once again, let's fully flush this thing out. Do you really do yourself the services necessary from a monetary standpoint by doing stuff like that? Because you run the risk, in my mind, turning off fans, not knowing who's going to play every single day. Now, you're only going to get a percentage of the gate because you're only going to be able to allow a certain percentage of people into each stadium.
Right.
If they're playing. So you're really going to be relying a lot on your television and streaming dollars.
Yeah.
But if you're the, you know, everybody wants to see the Lakers and, you know, AD and LeBron. But if they're taking the first 30 games off, you know,
right,
you're splitting the first 60 games for load management because they haven't had any time off, that's a tough investment for from us. We're like, oh, I ain't watching Lakers today. You know,
right.
I like KCP, you know. you know, I like certain players, but I'm not spending 2 hours watching that. You know, and now you're losing television revenue because the ratings are going to be low because people aren't investing because you're not putting the product, full product on the floor. But you're
very
not true. Putting the full product on the floor because you're trying to protect them for later on.
Yeah.
But you're losing money up front. And if you lose money up front, it's going to be hard to get that momentum going into the back end of the season. Because if you're
right.
losing dollars in December and January,
yeah.
it's going to be hard to pick those dollars up in May and June. It
very
really
true.
Is because people have checked out.
Yeah, like when they brought the bubble back, it took me a while to get warmed up to it. And I love NBA basketball.
Right.
But it took me a while to get warmed up to it without the fans and seeing the video board. But as the play progressed and it got toward the playoffs, we have some great playoff basketball. But it took me a few games to get into the flow of seeing this new normal that we're into.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of other stuff going on. You're fighting up against a lot of things too, you know. The rescheduling on how things went. You know, game started
right.
off at 12 noon. You know, it was
right.
like watching the NCAA tournament every day. You
right.
know, and, you know, and there was an adjustment. A lot of people tuned out because they had to watch it without the crowd, and they didn't like the energy.
Right.
You know, it wasn't the same. You know, there was a lot of adjustments we had to make off the top of the bat when this was introduced to us the first time. You know, and who's going to say how it's going to be when they come back this time? You know, and
yeah.
like you were saying earlier, it's going to be hard to pull off because you're going through a course of, you know, 72 games as opposed to 8 games and then the playoffs kicking in.
Right.
You know, there is no bubble. There is travel. The one thing I think they do have on their side, though, is that they've been through it before.
Right.
So they know what's necessary. You know, so let's hope. You know,
yeah.
let's hope that they can – find a way by the time this kicks around to, you know, do as best as they can without having, you know, interruptions.
Right.
Due to COVID, come in and stopping games and doing this, that, and the other, you know. But like you said, it's spiking everywhere. So,
right.
you know, with all of the people that it takes to put on an NBA game and those that are involved in travel, that's a good thing because they have their own private travel.
Right.
So they don't have to travel commercial or anything, but they do have private travel that they can still isolate players and travel at the exact same time. And the NBA is so big and how they travel normally, they can block out situations where there is no interaction for the most part with individuals
right.
as far as travel, hotel, stay, staff, and all this. And this. So they can minimize that a little bit. But the way it's spread, man, it's almost impossible over
yeah.
the course of 6 months, 8 months. Without being in one secure place for things not to flare up.
Yeah, so one wrong player get COVID at the wrong time. This going they might shut everything down.
Yeah.
Because remember the first time they shut down, it went back to Rudy Gobert, and then they connected the dots to everybody.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Utah played Denver. Denver played blah blah. Like it's
yeah.
just yo.
Yeah, but there was no contract tracing back there. There was. Nobody knew the rules back then.
Right.
I mean, I think now, we all know the rules as human beings, but the NBA knows how to function on a different set of rules because they've been through the bubble.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, it's that quote-unquote muscle memory to tap them back into this coming up season that they
right.
went through last season on how to function, you know, through this just on a, you know, much more mobile landscape. You know, they
right.
know what they have to do.
Right.
You know, and they
yeah.
do have the money to have testing in place on a regular basis. So hopefully they'll be able to catch things.
Yeah.
You know, earlier and quicker. You know,
yeah.
we'll see. It's going to be interesting. We'll see.
Definitely. Yeah, the Warriors, they on go. They already said someone setting aside $30 million for COVID testing to have their stadium at 50% capacity. So we all know if they're paying $30 million, you know, they bring in at least, what, 180 easy? Like they
yeah.
like don't give up 30.
I know, but 50 to me 50 is a lot, man. That's a lot.
Yeah, Bert. Yeah, that's like what that same whole like 24.
Yeah,
I'm
so whatever. Yeah, it's 4,000. Yeah, that's a you know that's a lot. If you run the risk, yeah, I would. to me personally, especially with it coming so close and only a couple weeks away and how everything's spiking all over the country, I would incrementally bring that in, man. I would be like, okay, we're going to start off at, 15%, maybe 11%.
Yeah.
Try to work our way up to 20 as it goes along, I have no idea how they're trying to start off and at least even mentally get to 50. You know, look, man, you know as well as I do. And once again, I'm not owner, so it's not my money.
Right.
You know, as they say, money is the root of all evil. And even though it's not the most important thing, it sure as hell beat what comes in second place. But
right.
You know.
Right.
But at some point, it boils down to, I think, greed. And, when you hear stuff like, we're going to try to, operate at a 50% capacity, to me, and I love the Golden State Warriors ownership team, that's just greed, though. That's just greed.
Yeah, they was gearing up for this move. The Chase Center, they had KD and everything. Fan base was popping and everything, and then injuries happened. And last year, they finished last. Like, they're not used to that. Like, they're trying to bring it back for strength. But, yeah, they may have to pull the plug on this 50% thing, like you said, because there's too much COVID going around right now.
Right. It is. And you wind up, running the risk of losing a lot more than you do gain. But, it's this is money. And money in America is, like I said, second to none. It's only second to power. And usually power and money go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So there usually is no separation. But I think, going through what they're going through from an ownership standpoint, it's almost like, equating, finding somebody on the desert who's been lost that hasn't had water.
Right.
In a while, money becomes that water.
Yeah.
You need it for your survival. So when you have a chance to have water, the way you go about getting the water, you're not like taking a cup of water down really slow. what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
right.
That's weird.
And that's kind of the way it is, I think, with money in this particular case. It's like, we have not, you're asking us almost go 2 years without generating any income. And we have hundreds of people on staff that we're trying to maintain, pay, and we still got players that we are locked into contracts with that we have to pay. All these deals that make this thing go, come down to us as an ownership team trying to keep this thing afloat.
Right.
That money becomes water.
So
you have to keep that in mind even when you throw the greed thing out there. It's, it's easy for somebody like me to say because it's not mine.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the main reason they finished the 1920 season, because of the money. That's why they put the bubble together.
Yeah.
And it wasn't successful. We're going to see how this season plays out, because 30 teams over all these cities, it's going to be different.
Yeah, it's going to be different. And, I think the same thing may apply, but as intense as it was in the bubble, is like, the team that has the best leadership is usually going to be the team that's going to pull it out, because the situations in the bubble were so unique. It was going to take more than just talent and, hunger and all of a sudden the other. It was going to break down the leadership. Who's going to be able to galvanize and keep 12 guys together on the same page over the course of those couple of months inside of that situation? Keep them locked in where, you want to just say, F it, I'm through with this. I miss my family. I miss normalcy. I miss all this, that, and the other. Who's going to be the team that has the leadership to keep everybody locked in and make them understand that this is our purpose? Try to keep putting all that aside. And let's stay focused, stay on point with what our purpose is, And that's why I think Miami and L.A. came out on top, because they were the ones that stayed, closer to that, and it showed in their leadership that, we were able to stay on point. I think the Lakers had an extra incentive, with the Kobe situation that helped them stay focused. When they wanted to drift off, you could always say, hey, we're doing this for Kobe. We're doing this for Mamba. This is just the championship. We owe him this, and that reels you back in.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see if that carries through this time around, because I don't think it's going to take the same type of leadership, because the situation is different.
Yeah.
You're not locked in. It's not you against the world the way it was before you were in the bubble, but the circumstances are still the same. So, who's going to be able to override, all the distractions now that you are playing basketball freer than you were before because of the liberties that you had that you didn't have in the bubble. It's still going to take, a leadership team inside of each team to keep your players locked in and abiding by the rules. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Staying
right.
true to what it is that you're trying to do you know, and it's no longer it's an 8-game finishing season, and then 16 you had to win 16 games.
Yeah.
So whatever, you're not talking about, you know, 20 something games now. You're talking about 72.
Right.
You know, how are you going to lock in and keep everybody locked in under, you know, these circumstances, you know, for 72 games? That's what's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, and the Lakers already came out and said they don't have any fans anytime soon. So they already, they're like, nah, we ain't doing this right now. So,
right.
So they're going
to But once again, to your point, they maybe can afford to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and Golden State, because of how things went down last year, they may not be able to. You know, I'm pretty sure their teams won't be able to. You know, every ownership, you know, you look at differently. And we can't start counting other people's money.
True. Very
you know, but when you're losing that many millions, you know, unless you got an angel donor,
yeah,
you know
right.
what I'm saying. It's, at some point, you know, it's you don't sacrifice money. I mean, you don't sacrifice health for money, but you find a way to do both.
Right.
You want to turn over every stone to see is there a way for me to do both.
Right. Is it just me, or is no one really talking about the Lakers championship? You think it's because of the it went down? Or because of the past, everybody see the Lakers had, because every team they play, there was an injury or maybe the player not there. Because it's like no one's talking about the championship, like the Lakers winning it.
Yeah. Well, I think it was a foregone – one, I think it was a foregone conclusion. I think also there were two things at play. One, yes, the injuries to Miami. But two,
right.
it was also the team that they didn't play in the East. For
the
championship.
Yeah.
Right. And I was making that the last one. The fact that they didn't have to go through the Clippers takes away from, you know, the overall interest
right.
of the Lakers actually winning. Everybody
yeah.
was hell bent on seeing what that was gonna look like. And for the Clippers not to hold up the end of the deal, it's
yeah.
unfortunate. I think the Lakers are, you know, being punished for that
right.
publicly. You know, if we had seen them beat the Clippers, it would have been like, okay. You know,
yeah,
Lakers are
yeah.
for real. And,
yeah.
and you got to understand, man, we are living in a part of society that always wants to have topical conversations. It's almost as if nothing exists unless it's topical conversation. And when I mean topical conversation, it's like we're starting conversations off at the top. So if the Lakers aren't one of the best teams you've ever seen, we dismiss them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So if everything's about the GOAT conversation, everything gets generalized to, like I said, the top of the food chain, and that's where the conversation starts now. We don't appreciate anything under that as a society anymore. So because we didn't see the Lakers go through the Clippers, you know, because we didn't see them go against maybe Giannis in Milwaukee, we didn't see them go up against maybe a healthy Philadelphia squad. You know, we didn't see them go
right.
up against a stacked Boston squad. We didn't see him go up against what we felt people talking about, you know, and that's sad because you miss a lot of appreciation for things that are really good.
Yeah, because everybody's talking about the Clippers meltdown more than the Lakers winning the championship.
Yeah.
I mean, now we got people talking about Russell Westbrook traded.
What rumors are you following?
Well, Russell Westbrook.
Because I'm just hearing that Russell and James are not happy with the direction they're going because Daryl Morey leaving and with them getting rid of Mike. Well, they ain't really get rid of Mike. They're telling Mike
yeah.
left. But they knew that was happening because they never renewed his contract. He was lame duck all season last season. You know.
Paul George. I'm sorry. My bad. Paul George.
Yeah. So,
switching Paul George for Westbrook. I don't
right.
know if that would work or not.
Well, I don't – it's not about – whether it's going to work or not, is whether you know or not James Harden wants that to happen. They're still building this team around James Harden and him, you know, helping them make decisions. Now, he purposely
yeah.
bought, you know, that same relationship.
Right.
Russell's there for a reason.
And yeah, Russell's more aggressive than Hubs.
You know, on a social basis, they wasn't able to do with Chris Paul. So, you know, look, man, the one thing you don't want to do at this stage of the game, especially if you're Houston, you don't want to lose everything. Now, you know, I'm not going to say I was a big fan of Daryl Morey at all. I
yeah.
like Mike D'Antoni. I just don't think he was the perfect coach for that team, you know, if you're trying to win a championship. But I do
yeah.
like Mike D'Antoni a lot. You know, it's almost like I think he's a great offensive coordinator. You
yeah.
know, and but or he's a great – head coach, but he needs a defensive coordinator. You know, if you give, like, trust me, if you had given Mike D'Antoni Tom Thibodeau as his defensive coordinating coach, they would have won the championship. You know what I'm saying? He needs somebody to think on the other side, you know, the same way that Golden State was able to do with Steve Kerr, where you had Alvin Gentry, you know, running the offensive side as the offensive coordinator, and had Ron Adams running the defensive side, who's still there. You know, I thought Mike D'Antoni needed that defensive guy the same way it's structured in Philadelphia, the same way they had it with the Bulls all these years. Tex Winter was running the defense, you know, with the – yeah, I mean, Tex Winter was running the offense, but Phil Coffey on defense. You need that person, basically. And Mike D'Antoni never had that. I'd say that long way to say I've never been a big fan of Daryl Morey. But my point is you don't want to lose everything. You know, Daryl Morey constructed that team. I think he was there 12 or 13 years. I forgot how long he was there.
Yeah,
he was there a long time. So you lose him. Then you lose the coach that has been there for the last, what, 4 years, 4 or 5 years, whatever, that built around James Harden. Now you lose those two. If you go around and trade Westbrook, who James Harden is like, that's my ride or die.
Right.
If you lose Westbrook, then you're going to lose Harden automatically. Not everything's gone.
Yeah, in a full rebuild.
To me, whoever's starting that whole Russell Westbrook trade thing, I hope that's not what they're thinking, because they're going to lose everything. You don't lose Russell Westbrook without losing James Harden at the exact same time.
Yeah, very true. Might see Harden in Philly with Morey again.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. Definitely.
Right. And, you know, you're not going to win a championship in the West against a Clippers team that feels that they may have to prove something, and a Lakers team that wants to defend their title by bringing in all new players. You starting from scratch again. Like I said, you may not be starting from square one, but you ain't in square two yet.
Very true. And you got Phoenix coming up. You got Utah still there.
I was just mentioning the teams at the very top, man. So, yeah, you got all type of other teams. Houston can't afford to start at scratch. They can't.
Right. Very true. They must run and fall to the bottom of the West and not come out for a while.
Right. And I don't know if James Harden is down to do a rebuild.
Definitely. Definitely. Scoop, thank you for joining me again, man. Always a pleasure. Always.
Always, man. My man, I appreciate it. Appreciate the conversation. Always, my man.
Talk to you soon.
Let's talk for this thing tips off again. See where we at.
Oh, definitely. Get you back very soon. We'll circle back around.
All right, man.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
Yes, that was legendary ESPN journalist Scoop Jackson. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.